Welcome to the Leading Deeply podcast. I'm Dr. Joe Albert, coach, consultant, and teacher, interested in storytelling and helping people thrive.
And I'm Dr. Beck Burson, a physician and psychiatrist fascinated by neurons and narratives and how people change. Thanks for joining us at Leading Deeply, a space to get curious how individuals and organizations address the undeniable desire we all have for meaning, purpose, and belonging. We want to know how leaders and those aspiring to lead can engage and animate these human needs to cultivate flourishing.
Hello and welcome to Leading Deeply. I'm Joe Albert, and with me is Dr. Beck Burson. And today we're going to be talking about meaning and values in work and in life. This is a very exciting segment for us, because with us today is Howard Behar from Starbucks. And Howard, he's a retired president at Starbucks Coffee, was pivotal in Starbucks' growth when they grew from 28 stores to over 15,000 stores across five continents. And today we're going to be talking about values, how they are discovered and created by us, and also how we manifest them in our work and in our lives. Beck, it's exciting to have Howard with us today.
I'm feeling so grateful, and I'm looking forward to where the conversation will lead us.
Yeah, this will be a treat, and I think it'll be practical as well as inspiring in so many ways, as Howard always is. So thank you. Thank you for being here today.
At Horizon Credit Union, community is who we serve, and helping you grow is our goal. Your path is our purpose, and together we can make a positive impact. Whether you're ready for a checking account, a home loan, or a team that cares about your dreams, doing business here does good in the community. Discover the difference and open your account today, or find a branch near you at hzcu.org. Horizon Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity lender, insured by NCUA.
It's my privilege. I love you and what you have stood for all these years and what you've taught me, and so I appreciate this opportunity.
Beck, can you contextualize this just a bit in terms of the framework that we're focusing on this year?
Sure. So both for our listeners, we've got a lot of leaders and emerging leaders. And for you, Howard, we've been having conversation revolving around meaning, purpose, and belonging. Today, specifically looking at meaning, we've kind of broken it down into three steps. The first step is transcendence. So we talked to Dr. Lisa Miller at Columbia University, who looks at spirituality and mental health, being able to connect to something beyond yourself to inspire you as to where those values might come from. Number two is going to be clarity of values, which that's what we're stoked to be talking with you about. And that will probably dovetail and complement the third aspect, which is alignment of values, getting those values aligned. I'm curious where the conversation will go, because I know you have a lot of experience in clarifying values and aligning them.
Great. Thank you. And Howard, thank you. We've known each other for a while, and it's just a treat to be with you in this setting, and look forward to the conversation.
I appreciate this opportunity.
And narrative is a bit of a thread that runs through all our interviews with folks. And would you mind just telling a bit of a story about your background and how you came into this career of yours that's been so exemplary?
Well, I was raised by two immigrants. My father was actually born in 1895, immigrated to Seattle in 1911 as a 15-year-old, left all his family behind. He had one brother that was in Vancouver, British Columbia. And my father couldn't speak the language, spoke Bulgarian and Ladino, which was an offshoot of Spanish and Hebrew combined. And he worked in the Pike Place Market just three, 4 years after it opened in Seattle. And eventually he saved his pennies, nickels, and dimes. He got married to my mother, who immigrated from Latvia in 1917, just as the First World War was kind of in the midst. And they opened a small mom and pop grocery store. So I grew up in this little neighborhood grocery store that was, in those days they had individual charge accounts, there were no credit cards, individual charge accounts for customers. So, the the people who were coming in and shopping were all from local, right around the neighborhood of where the store was. And so they weren't customers. They were, first of all, human beings. They were our neighbors. They were our friends. And so, you know, I watched that all happen. And I was, my dad was 50 when I was born. So he'd a long way down his career. But I watched how he treated people and how my mother treated people. And I didn't realize it at the time, but how important those lessons were, that, you know, that you weren't serving customers. You know, you weren't trying to get a dollar. You were serving human beings. And whether they had a dollar or not, you had to be there for them, because, you know, you saw these people all the time. And so that's where I really, the foundation took hold at that time. You know, I didn't understand it at all. And I remember one time when I was about maybe 8 or 9 years old, I was up by the cash register. My dad was ringing up a customer. It was a hand crank, adding a machine, right? You pulled the crank, it went bing, and 10 keys across, 10 keys down. And then a slip would come out, and he would attach it to the little book that held all the charges. And my dad would bill the customers at the end of the month. And so I was standing up there, and my dad asked me to go get a couple of baskets of strawberries. And I went back and I got a couple of baskets of strawberries. My dad took them and put them in the customer's bag. Customer walked out. Well, I was old enough to recognize that my dad hadn't rung those strawberries up on the cash register. So I said to my dad, I said, "Dad, you forgot to ring those up." And he just looked at me and said, "You know, Howard, not everything we do in life do we need to be paid for. Sometimes we just do things because they're the right thing to do." And I happen to know that these people are struggling right now and they can't afford fresh fruit. So it's just my way of helping out. Now, that lesson, it was in there, but it didn't really come to fruition until I was much older. And when I thought back about that little instance, because it stuck with me, and he was so right. We get too caught up in this having to be rewarded, having to be paid, having to be recognized in life, when really we need to be doing things for others because we want to do them. And so that has been a driving force in my life. As a matter of fact, it's how I got to Starbucks. I said to Howard Schultz, I said, "Let me work in a company for a week for free. You just look at me, I'll look at you. And at the end of that week, if we think there's something there, we'll have further discussions." Fortunately, you know, he liked me, and I fell in love with Starbucks, and you know, the rest became history. But, you know, it really is an important thing. See, that's a human value. Right, caring, and he cared about the people that he was serving, not because they had money in their pocket, but because they were human beings.
Yeah, thank you. And I love that idea of looking back at our narrative, our story, and from that you glean the values that you manifest so well today. The first time we met, you came to Gonzaga, the campus, and we had a student there who was going to be your tour guide, and I just never forget this, standing in the lobby, and I introduced you to her, and you said, "So, what are your values?" And she looked like starstruck, kind of, and she came up with some, which was very cool, by the way. But what I noticed just being with you that day was that you live it every day. And how did those values get clarified in your mind, the ones you hold so dear?
It was work, hard work. And it all came about because I'd had a kind of a mini crisis in my career. And I'd never really thought about my values, so to speak. I was in my early mid-20s, and I was just Howard being Howard, you know. And all of a sudden, I decided, because of the crisis that I'd had in my career, that I needed to define who Howard was. And so I started on that journey. And I read a book about personal growth, and I don't even remember the title of the book anymore. And it started out with the first chapter that you needed to define what your core values were. And it had a list in this book of about 300 words that represented human values. And it said you need to get down to 8 or 10. I got it down to 50, and it was really difficult after that. Because, you know, and I realized after a while that I could have more than 50 different values, but I had to get it down to the absolute core things. And so I did. And I wrote them down, and And then it said you have to define what those values mean to you, right? Because a value, a word is just a word until it becomes an action. And so my first core value is honesty. And I have eight core values that I live by. My first one is honesty. And so, I had to define what honesty meant to me. What would I lie about? What would I tell a white lie about? We all have done those things. And so anyway, I defined my eight core values, and then I defined what they meant to me. And then it said you have to write a personal mission statement, which at that time mine was pretty. I had gone into the home furnishings industry because of my brother-in-law. And I wanted to be one of the leading people in the home furnishings industry. That became a mission. And over time, I changed when I got to Starbucks, and I plagiarized part of what we did at Starbucks. And then I defined what I call my six P's. Those are how I want to live my life. And they coincide with my values. My six P's, I'll give them to you. The first one is everything I do in my life has to have a purpose greater than myself. It has to be bigger than me. And primarily, it's about serving others. And then the second P is purpose, or is passion, excuse me. If I'm going to have something that's bigger than me, then I damn well better be passionate about it. Scream it from the highest mountaintops. Hold myself accountable for it. And then the third P is persistence. Nothing happens in life, in terms of if you're trying to live your values without being persistent about it. Because we all make mistakes. There are rocks in all of the rivers of our lives. And we hit those rocks. Some of them we see before we hit them. Some of them we see them and we crash into them anyway. And we have to get under them, around them, through them, or blow them up, whatever it is. But we have to be persistent about that. Then the fourth P is patience. Because not everything comes in the time frame that you want. The most important person you have to have patience with is yourself. And lots of patience with others. And then the fifth P is performance. Performance counts in this world. You've got to do what you say you're going to do. And family, if you say to your son or daughter, I'll be at your soccer game, you got to show up. If you commit to have a monogamous relationship in your life with your significant other, then you need to do that, or don't be married. Don't commit to that kind of relationship. So performance matters in all aspects of life, work, whatever, because if you let your teammates down at work, right, you're letting the whole organization down. So performance matters. And then the sixth P is people. There's nothing any of us will do in life that isn't about serving another human being. And so I try to live my life according to my values, mission, and my six P's. And I really focused on it. And I don't live a perfect life. I make lots of mistakes. I don't always live up to my values, but I always have a place to go. And I had written them all down. So, and I've had them written down for since, well, let's see, almost 50 years.
What I thought was so inspiring and cool is that in preparing for this interview, I literally Googled Howard Behar's core values, and a PDF document came up. It felt a little creepy, like I was looking in your journal, but it had exactly the congruency with what you're talking about, your core values, your mission, and the six P's. And I do a lot of values work with my patients, and sometimes it can feel a little bit formulaic, just like what you said, you start with a list of several hundred and whittle it down. But there is an art to it where you kind of have to put weight and see if they're life-giving to you. Was there some experimentation for you where maybe there were values that didn't make the cut, but when you actually put weight on them, it became more evident, this one I want to include and this one didn't? And is there a story that comes to mind?
Well, it was a difficult journey. It took me months to do it, and I'd work it on weekends, and I would try to say, is how important is this really to me? And look at there are lots of words that could describe any of us in terms of a value. And the core values are just the ones that you don't have to be perfect on it. This is not, I am going to have perfectly defined core values, and you don't need to do that. When you start to go down that pathway, then they start to become effortful. And I wanted them to be effortless. And that's how I got to them. And I'll read them to you. It's honesty, fairness, respect for self and others, responsibility, integrity, trust in self and others, caring and love. And they're not 1 through eight. They're not in any order of import. They're all important. And so I have to live by all of them. But I think it's individual. People, I've worked with other people trying to do this exercise too, and you can get caught up in it, right? Well, is it this or is it that? You don't have to make it that. You can have another list off to the side of 50 other words that might describe you. I could do that, and because we're not just those eight things. We're complex. But
I don't know if it fits, but I was actually thinking about the metaphor of our DNA and how our core values are sort of like the building blocks of C, G, A, and T, and how you can make any permutation of those building blocks, and it can look wildly different as it's expressed, but you always come back to those building blocks. And there is an art to it. It's not completely rigid, but to have a default that we in stress can respond with and not react with, I think is so important.
I had so you know the so my core values, some of those I wasn't that person. I want to become that person. And so I selected those because I wanted to become that person. I'll give you one, and trust in self and others. So my mother came from Latvia. She, if you've ever seen Fiddler on the Roof, that was her life. Dirt floors, Russian Cossacks coming into her village. They took two brothers that they never, two of her brothers who never came back. And so she had a real distrust for anybody that wasn't family, and pretty much who anybody that wasn't Jewish. And I kind of was raised with that, and I grew to not like that. I did not want to live my life distrusting. And so I made my mind up that I was going to give trust before I got trust, and that trust was going to be an integral part of my life until the trust was unearned. And that's what I did. And so I wasn't that person when I wrote down trust in self and others, but I became that person because that's what I focused on.
That really resonates. Like I said, I've been doing values work with my patients for 5, 10 years. And if I'm honest, it's been a very evolving process within me. I am still open to negotiation as far as what's in my top five. And in preparing to talk today, I was like, let me go back to my list. And I found it was liberating to make it more narrative and kind of see which sentences stood out and then the core words within those sentences. And I'm thinking about what you're talking about with trust. One of the sentences I wrote down was, love, compassion, and tenderness are the threads that stitch us together. And I had recently uploaded or upgraded kindness to tenderness. And some of that was in response to our interview with Father Greg Boyle. And so I was really thinking, is tenderness the right word? Well, this morning, I've got two girls. They're 5 and 9. And my 5-year-old has these storms of explosions where she'll just yell and scream. And here I had just written this love, compassion, and tenderness are the threads that stitch us together. And I'm trying so hard to be tender, and part of me is like, should I just omit that as part of my core values? That this one is really, really hard. So I think it's a paradox, or I wonder if it's a paradox. On one hand, you want it to be effortless, but there is a striving, there is a challenge, there is a degree of I'm not there yet, and this is reminding me, even if I can only do this 20% perfect, which is pretty imperfect. I'm gonna try.
I agree totally with you. And As a young kid, I struggled with honesty, like many young kids do. And that became a real driver in my life. And it represented more than just will you lie? It represented more of will I be an open book? Will I be authentic? Will I be vulnerable? And it went, that's really, when I define it, that's more what it means to me today than will I tell a fib, or a lie to somebody, not be honest with somebody. It became more of that. And I think the key to all of this and why it's so important is I believe that you want to live your life with intention, right? You don't want to wake up at my age, at 79, almost 80 years old, and look back at your life and say, what the hell happened? You want to be able to look back at your life and say, did I live up to my values 100% of the time? No, I didn't. Did I get everything done that I would have liked to have gotten done? No, I didn't. But for the most part, I can look back at my life and say I did okay. And I'm real focused on that. I have always have had a 5-year plan, 1, 3, 5-year plan, and we do it in our family. My wife and I do one together, and then we each have our own. But and so I want to be able to say, I pretty much got done what I set out to do.
That's impressive to me. And Howard, you left home furnishing work, and then you come on board with Starbucks and Howard Schultz. And you've told a couple stories before, which I love hearing, by the way, about your own. I don't know, it's part discovery, part creation of values at Starbucks, I'm guessing. I mean, there's a couple experiences that you share. I've heard you share before, and they're just embedded in my brain. And there's a story about one of the, I think, store managers that came to meet with you and Howard. And then the other one was about the fellow down in California that happened. Would you mind sharing those two? They're just memorable for me.
Sure. It's basically two men named Jim. Yeah, both had the same name, Jim. And the first Jim was a store manager in one of our stores in Seattle, one of our oldest stores. And I had just started at Starbucks about 3 months before Jim had called me. And he said, I'd like to come see you and Howard Schultz. Well, being the good executive that I thought I wanted to be, I said, well, maybe it's something that I can handle with you, Jim. And, so we don't bother Howard. I said, really need to see you both. Well, he'd had a long relationship with Howard even before I got there, so I understood. So the morning comes that Jim arrives at our support center, and I invite Jim back. We go into Howard's office, and Howard had a little love seat. Well, Jim and I sat down. Howard was on the phone, and he said, give me a minute, and I'll be with you. And so we sat there, and we were just making small talk. And then Howard got off the phone. They talked a little bit, and then Howard said, Jim, how are you doing? And he said, well, Howard, I'm not doing so well. And Howard looked at him and said, well, what's wrong, Jim? And he said, well, I need to tell both of you that I have contracted AIDS. Now, this was early on in the AIDS journey. And, none of us really knew. And as I'm sitting next to him on the love seat, I'm thinking, oh my God, am I sitting too close? Is this a virus? You can cat? What is this? And so Howard looked at him. He said, well, how can we help you? And he said, well, Jim said, I'd like to work as long as I can work. And Howard just looked at him and said, Jim, you can work as long as you want to work. Now, remember, we were in the food and beverage business. So making that statement without us really knowing all the things we need to know. And then Howard said to him, and Jim, when you no longer can work, we'll continue to pay you your full wages, until you leave us. And then Howard said, how are you going to pay for your health care? And Jim said, well, there are some organizations that are developing now for people that have AIDS to help. And Howard said, absolutely not. You'll stay on our health program even when you're not working with us. Now, we were a young company losing money, and we had no idea what this was going to cost us. But, it was such a valuable lesson for me to hear this young CEO, Howard Schultz, just say, we will do what it takes to help you because you're a human being and you have value. So that message went zooming out through the whole company. And everybody understood that we would do everything we needed to do to help another human being. And it said to me, I can do anything I need to do to serve another human being. And it was an important lesson. And we, you know, there are lots of times when that has happened at Starbucks where not only the company would step up, but people working in the company would step up to help other human beings. From a store manager giving a kidney to somebody, and you know that they didn't even really know it was just a customer, you know, that would come in often. And so those kind of things really make a difference. And it's you know, that was a big thing. Well, then there was a Big Jim. Big Jim was a customer of ours in Santa Monica, and he lived in a nursing home across the street from one of our stores. And every day he would come in about 2 o'clock. He'd order a small drip coffee or a short drip coffee and a blueberry muffin. And every day after, you know, they made friends with the people, baristas made friends with Jim. And every day they would write something on the bag or the cup to Jim, a little message. He was a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan. One of the times they wrote, "Hey, Jim, the Steelers suck," or "Jim, we love you," or "Jim, you know, we appreciate you so much." And it, you know, it was a dialogue, and he would joke with them, and they weren't a customer and barista. They were friends. They loved each other, and all of the team loved Jim, and Jim loved all of the team. And so they would put away, you know, they wanted to make sure that Jim always got his blueberry muffin, so they would always put away the muffin for Jim. Well, one day, 2 o'clock passes, 3 o'clock passes, and no Jim. And so one of the baristas says, "I'm going to take the muffin and a cup of coffee across the street to Jim." And goes into the nursing home and goes up to the front desk and asks the person at the front desk, "Where's Jim?" And she just looked at him, and a tear came down her eye, and said, I hate to tell you this, but Jim passed away last night in his sleep." And so barista went back to the store and told everybody was incredibly sad. And the next day, one of Jim's children came into the store and asked the manager, could your team all come to Jim's funeral tomorrow? I know how much he loved all of you, and I think it would really be special." Well, the manager didn't even blink. He said, "We'll all be there." And he found replacements for everybody at the store, and they all showed up at the place where they have the service. And what is it called? And as they walked in the front, here are these three big round tables, like you would see at you know, you went to some organization's dinner, 8 to 10 people sit around. On those three tables was every cup and every bag that they had given him over a couple of years period of time. Now, who would have thought that somebody would have saved all those bags and all those cups with the little messages that were on there? But it was proof positive that it's the small things in life. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to cost you anything but a little bit of time to write a message and express, you know, your love for somebody or your caring for somebody or just joking with somebody. And it was a valuable lesson that in life, you know, we're here to serve others. And when we do that, whether it's big or whether it's small, whether it's walking down the street, just looking up and saying hello to somebody, you know, getting on an elevator, don't have your head down, have your head up, you know, and say good morning, or good afternoon, you know, and helping people to have a better day, or picking up a piece of paper off the street. You didn't put the piece of paper there, but, you know, I have this little game I play with myself. Every day I have to pick up a piece of paper if I'm out walking downtown Seattle. Fortunately, there's enough inventory that I never have to worry about whether I'll find something, you know. But so those two, the stories of Jim are about values, about caring about others, and showing that it's sometimes it's the big things like you know, taking care of somebody, with supporting somebody financially. Sometimes it's a little small things.
Well, that's I don't drink coffee, but I love those stories, and I love Starbucks because of those stories. So to me, they're just inspiring, and I just love hearing them every time you share them. And I walked across campus with you as you're picking up pieces of paper on the ground. I'll never forget that. I thought, God, I should start doing this. You know, I felt kind of embarrassed that I didn't do it, you know.
Everybody did it. We never have to worry about having garbage on the street.
Yeah, you're right. Right. Yeah. So, okay. So a lot of our listeners will be emerging or younger leaders, 20s, 30s, you know, that kind of thing. And let's say they move into a supervisory or management role in some way, shape, or form. How do you begin to instill values, you know, within a culture, within a team, within an organization, if you're a young emerging leader?
Well, you better have your own values written down. It all starts with you. So if you're not there, then don't waste your time trying to get somebody else there, because then it's not real. It's not authentic. So it has to start with you doing the work. And then, you know, organizations are reflective of their leaders' values. They don't all have to be exactly the same. It's not my point. But organizations are reflective on the actions that leaders take and make and decisions that leaders make. And so they need to be in congruent with the values of the organization. So after your work is done, then you can get the organization together and talk about, what do we want our values to be here? You know, what are we about? Are we about greed and ambition? You know, are we about fairness and sharing? You know, and those conversations have to be had. And, you know, we had at Starbucks what we called our guiding principles. The first guiding principle was that we treat each other with respect and dignity. That last guiding principle was we recognize that profitability is essential to our future growth and success. So, you know, those were intentionally put in the order that order, because profit comes out of living up to your values, doing the right things right. And that's what we try to do. So any leader that wants to instill values in an organization has to first instill values in themselves.
Yeah.
And then they can take that journey into an organization. And as you start an organization, now we didn't write our values down at Starbucks till we almost had 200 stores. All of a sudden we recognize that, hey, all we're doing is opening stores. Why are we doing this? You know, why are we all here? And we started to work on it. It's where we came up with what we call our BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goal, as Jim Collins calls it. Good to great, built to last. And our BHAG became this. We wanted to be one of the most well-known and respected organizations in the world, known for nurturing and inspiring the human spirit. Not a word about how much money we wanted to make, how many stores we were going to have, but respected and known for nurturing and inspiring the human spirit. And, you know, have we been perfect? Was Starbucks perfect? No. Made lots of mistakes, didn't always nurture and inspire the human spirit, but we always had those words to come back to, and they unified us.
Yeah.
Still
yeah.
Today.
And there's no mention of coffee in that statement. I mean, that's what's impressive to me, and that's exactly what you guys have created there, I think, is that space where people can, I don't know, find a place to be quiet, to think, to meet with people, whatever it is. But coffee was never in the title, which I always liked about that, which, of course, was the title of your book, by the way. People haven't read it. It's just a great book. So, Beck, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking about how core values and priorities oftentimes get conflated. You know, people think one is the same as the other. And your idea of, or, you know, when you write about it and it's not about the coffee, the concept of wearing one hat.
Right.
That was really clarifying for me, in that your values give you consistency, give you congruence in all your different environments.
Right.
And that builds trust, that consistency. Yeah. And it helped clarify to me, our values follow us regardless what environment we're in.
Yes.
Our priorities are these important areas where our values are expressed.
Yes.
You know, and so, because growing up, it was always modeled to me. I can't tell you how many people had the same four F values. It was like friends, family, faith, and fitness.
Yeah.
It was just a very popular thing. But I look back at that, and I don't think those are values. Those are priorities in which you express your values.
Right, exactly. I agree with
Yeah,
that.
and so I think that's very important for people to feel free to kind of shed that confinement of like, oh, your values have to also express your priorities. Nope, you can do that separately. But your values are going to follow you in that one hat that you wear everywhere.
The values are more how you do things, in a sense, right? It's with my relationships with my family, I'm always honest. You know, for example, honesty is the value. Family is a priority for your relationship with your family. And so that wearing one hat, I think, is incredibly important. Most people, when I say, well, wear one hat, they think about the hats that we wear and the roles we play. And I'm not talking about that, you know, mother, father,
right.
son, daughter, teacher, whatever. That's a role we play. And that's that we might wear multiple hats in the roles we play. But I'm talking about the hat that we wear that defines who we are as a human being. You know, so you wake up in the morning and you look across the bed from yourself and you say, uh-oh, I better put on my spouse or significant other hat. You better ask yourself the question, am I in the right relationship, or is this relationship going where I want it to go? Right. And then, or you go to work and you say, oh, I better put on my Starbucks hat. No, you should be able to wear your hat with inside of Starbucks or with inside your marriage. And your hat of who you are and your values.
I'm really thinking about what you said, that the values are the how.
Yeah.
Because it makes me think of both Viktor Frankl's quote, man can endure just about any how if he has a why,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
And then thinking about Simon Sinek, you know, knowing your why is more important than your how.
Yeah.
I wonder if values are both the why and the how. Like, what are your thoughts on that as far as the why and the how and values?
Well, I think the values go along with that, with the why. I mean, when you put a word down that describes your values, so I put honesty down. You'd ask yourself the question, why is that important to me? You know, why is honesty important to me? And so for that, I would say it goes with my other values, because I want to be trusted by others, and the only trust is a value. And in order to do that, I have to be honest. It fits with, I think that honesty goes with caring and love, which are other two values. So I think, yes, I agree with you. The why, there's, you ask yourself question, well, why do I have that value? And, you know, why is it important to me? Because, and it goes with purpose. You know, all those things fit together. They don't stand alone.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, your mission statement is somewhere along the lines to live your life every day, nurturing and inspiring the human spirit, both for yourself and others.
Yeah, right.
So would you say that's sort of your transcending why? And when you look at your core values,
yeah,
they're both the how of how you express that, but they also connect in a transcendent way to the why of your mission?
Yes, exactly. You're exactly right.
That's helpful.
Yeah. But in terms of, you know, as you look back, Howard, when have your values felt most challenging to live?
When I have been surrounded by people that didn't share them, mm-hmm. or share any of them, where there was a conflict between my personal values and the leadership of an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I always say to college students, you're not a victim here. Choose where you go to work, and choose it based on primarily on your mission, on your values, on what you want to do with your life, what you want to accomplish. And that means you got to do the work. That means that you don't just take a job because somebody says, here's a job, come to work for us. You know, you want to dig deep. You want to find out what are the values of the organization? Maybe they don't even have them written down, but you can ask. People will know. And you, and then you ask, let's say, you know, every most companies have missions today and some kind of value statement of some kind. So you always ask, where is the gap between what you say and what you do? And you ask that of people that work in the company. You ask questions like, what happens when you make a mistake? What happens when you do something well, you know, in this organization? And so what you're looking for is the ability to be an organization supportive of who you are as a person. And I, that's when I struggled the most was when that wasn't happening. And fortunately at Starbucks, for the most part, I mean, Howard and I had some conflicts and about things, but for the most part, because I was there so early, I had a tremendous influence on how we lived our, what our values were and how we lived our values and holding ourselves accountable to those things. And that helped me.
No, I can see that. I can't imagine being around you, not being inspired by your, by you and your values. Beck, we're almost out of time. Any last questions?
No last questions, but it was really hitting me when you were telling those two stories of the two gyms.
Yeah.
And weaving that together with your comment that you want to live with intentionality. You don't want to look back at your life and ask what the hell happened.
Yeah.
It became really evident to me that stories are the legacy of our values lived out.
Yes.
And, you know, people are so obsessed with their portfolio and the stock market and making sure they have enough money. But stories are our portfolio
yeah.
of our values lived out. And
that's a great analogy. That is, I never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I can go down every one of my, as you're saying that, I can go down every one of my values and I can give you a story that caused me to think more deeply about that value.
Totally, totally. And I, that just really struck me. And then two other quick observations that I just think are neat. My patients hear it all the time. You know, it's really important to me as a physician, but more importantly to me as a human being.
Yeah.
And I'll say, we all have the same initials, HB, human being. And I was like, I love that your initials are HB. Actually, HB. And even when you said your last name, Behar, meant spring in Spanish, it just made me think of your mission to inspire the human spirit and just the springing up of life from water. So it's been such a pleasure and joy to be in conversation about such important aspects of how we derive meaning and how we live it out.
Yeah. None of this is easy. Oh, right. It's you know, I have suffered from bouts of severe depression and have had anxiety my whole life, and I take medications for both. And I, you know, I've had times in my life where I lost track of who I was and where I was going. And, you know, I was able to, getting help, I was able to work through it. And, but, you know, it's, I always used to think by the time I got into my 70s, that every day was going to be bright sunshine, that I would have it figured out. And until finally I figured out that that's not how it works. You know, I still struggle with anxiety. I still have little bouts of depression sometimes, but I've come to learn that I can work through those and that this too shall pass. And, but it's a difficult journey, but you can help yourself on this journey by writing these things down, by giving yourself a roadmap to live your life.
I love it. Well, you have nurtured us. And this is just, you know, I love you to death. And you're just inspiring and nurturing in every way, as long as I've known you. So you're a gift to us. So I can't thank you enough for this time with you. And just your presence, it means so much. And I know for our listeners, it will also be highly impactful because you are just, you live it and make it real every day. So thank you so much for joining us. And it's truly a pleasure to be with you.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Please take care of yourself, and thank you again.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Wow. What a great session with Howard. And Beck, what were some of your takeaways from it?
I was just so inspired to ratchet down and tighten my own mission statement. You know, I've been working on values for a while, and just in preparation for this interview, feel like there was a lot of clarity, which was exciting for me. And now I want to try to bring it together with the why of a mission statement. So I feel really inspired to do that. And I also was just thinking about conflict resolution, actually, and how it's so much more possible when both parties know each other's values.
I liked his questions about that. Like, how do you handle mistakes? How do you handle failure? I mean, it was like that's really helpful. That's ways to get clear on what a organization's values are, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm just so compelled to do the work that we talk about, and wanting to empower individuals and organizations to have clear insight on what their values are and how to express that and consistently align with it. So it was very life-giving. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, and I was just glancing. I was just reading a book. Jim Kuzis and Mary Posner wrote a book called Learning Leadership. And there's a section here where they go, your fundamental values and beliefs represent the core of who you are. They influence every aspect of your life, your moral judgments, people you trust, the appeals you respond to, and the way you invest your time and money. Values help you determine what to do and what not to do. Lots of different interests out there compete for your time, your attention, and your approval. But before you listen to those voices, you have to listen to that voice inside that tells you what's truly important. Only then will you know when to say yes and when to say no and mean it. That's it exactly. I mean, that's Howard right there, and so
Nail on the head.
yeah, it really is. And that's why, for me at least, it is just a privilege to know him and to be able to have access like this. So hopefully for listeners, there's some equally valuable takeaways, and we're appreciative, and we're looking forward to our next podcast. And but thanks for joining us.
And if what you found was inspiring from this conversation, you can get more information in the two books that Howard has written. It's Not About the Coffee, as well as The Magic Cup. And he's got a website at howardbehar.com. If you enjoyed today's conversation, which we're so glad that you joined us, we know you're busy and can spend your time lots of ways. And if today was nourishing to you, please join us again next time. We're going to be delving into the topic of belonging. And you can also go to leading-deeply.com. Again, that's leading-deeply.com, and sign up for our newsletter that goes out about once or twice a month, and we'll go deeper on these topics. And we look forward to connecting with you. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you're all well, and we look forward to seeing you next time.